Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
As I stood at the edge of the uncharted territory, my heart pounding with a mix of excitement and trepidation. The group of inexperienced hikers had gone missing somewhere within this vast and treacherous wilderness area, and time was running out. The weather had taken a turn for the worse, and I knew that every minute counted. With my expert knowledge of the terrain and survival skills, I had been entrusted to lead the search and rescue mission. There were 15 people on my SAR team, and we had a task of finding these hikers. Do know that I had seen my fair share of wonders and dangers, but what awaited me deep within those woods was something entirely new. Ignoring the cautionary voice in the back of my mind, I decided to venture alone into the uncharted area, leaving my team who camped nearby. The woods grew darker, the trees towering above, casting long, ominous shadows. My footsteps were silent, my senses heightened. The wind whispered through the branches, as if warning me of an imminent danger. Suddenly, a chill ran down my spine, and I felt an unexplainable presence. And then I saw it. Standing amidst the trees, bathed in an ethereal glow, was an unknown creature. Its humanoid-shaped head had eyes as black as the night, its hunched back giving it a sinister appearance. Its mouth was stretched wide open, frozen in a scream that seemed to echo through the silence of the forest. The creature appeared pale, almost sickly, with a hauntingly anorexic appearance. I reached for my camera, desperate to capture evidence of this extraordinary encounter. My hands trembled as I tried to focus, but before I could press the shutter, the creature vanished into the darkness, leaving me in disbelief. Returning to the team's camping spot, I eagerly shared my encounter, hoping for understanding and support. But instead, disbelief greeted me. They accused me of playing games, of trying to divert attention from our mission. Their skepticism stung, but I couldn't let it deter me. The lives of the missing hikers depended on our efforts. We continued our search, our determination unwavering. With every step, I couldn't shake the image of the unknown creature from my mind. It gnawed at me, filling me with a mix of fascination and dread. But I knew that finding the hikers had to remain our priority. Days turned into nights, and the wilderness tested our resolve. We scoured every inch of the park, following any lead, yet the hikers remained elusive. Exhausted and discouraged, we gathered around the flickering fire one evening, hoping for a breakthrough. I took a deep breath, mustering the courage to share my story once more. As I recounted the encounter, the flickering firelight danced on their skeptical faces. But this time, there was something different. A glimmer of doubt, a shadow of curiosity. Weary and with nothing to lose, we decided to expand our search to areas we hadn't explored before. Days stretched into weeks, and then, finally, a breakthrough. A distant cry for help echoed through the woods, filling us with renewed hope and adrenaline. We followed the sound, pushing through dense foliage until we reached a small clearing. There, amidst the tangled undergrowth, we found nothing. It's like some creature mimicked the sounds of voice of lost hikers. Even though we searched the whole park, we never found them. As a ranger at the national park, I was accustomed to the routines and responsibilities that came with the job. Locking up for the night was one such task, and on this particular evening, I leaned against my trusty truck, savoring the last drag of my cigarette. With a flick, I extinguished the butt and made my way to the main office. Inside, I diligently switched on the security cameras and motion sensors that safeguarded the small complex. The park's tranquility at night was both soothing and eerie. I knew I had only one loop to run before I could call it a night myself. The forest was peaceful, with only the occasional rustle of leaves to break the silence. The clearings created by past fires and the access road that ran along each side of them offered a serene beauty even in the dim light. My mind was at ease as I walked along the well-worn trail, checking for any signs of trouble or disturbance. Then, something caught my eye as I glanced south down the road. There, at one of the campsites, stood a lone figure. It appeared too short to be an adult, and the way it moved seemed unnatural. My heart skipped a beat as I dropped my cigarette, extinguishing it under my boot without breaking my gaze. Instinctively, I reached for the radio on my belt and began making my way towards the mysterious figure. I had heard my fair share of strange reports from campers and hikers, but this felt different. The superstitions about monsters in national parks came to mind, but I tried to suppress such thoughts. With each step, my heart raced, and I felt a mix of fear and excitement. As I got closer, I realized the figure had disappeared, leaving behind only a burnt-out campfire. Puzzled, I scanned the clearing, looking for any clues. The night was calm, and the moonlight cast an ethereal glow over the scene. There was no sign of anyone else around, and the silence felt almost suffocating. Campfires were strictly forbidden in this area, which only added to my sense of unease. As I returned to my truck, a wave of curiosity washed over me. This was just one of the many strange occurrences that rangers had to deal with in the park. Reports came in, but most could be easily explained as people engaging in reckless behavior. However, there were always those few reports that defied explanation. They lingered in the back of my mind, reminding me that there might be more to this world than we can comprehend. And I was eager to share these mysteries with others, hoping to uncover the truth behind these enigmatic encounters in the wilderness. As I drove back to the main office, I couldn't help but wonder what other peculiar stories awaited me in this vast national park. I was determined to keep my eyes and ears open, ready to face whatever strange and inexplicable phenomena lay ahead. I have a story I would like to share with you that happened to me when I was younger. I was 17 years old when this happened. I lived with my parents on a farm outside the Australian town of Wagga Wagga. I was in bed and a strange feeling I can't fully explain woke me up. The time was around midnight, roughly. I felt a great sense of unease as I looked toward my bedroom window into the darkness of night. Not long after, a bright light that looked like it came down from the sky appeared. At first, I thought it was a car passing by as we lived next to the road, but I quickly excused that possibility as the light hung around. This is where things start to get a little unbelievable. I began hearing footsteps outside on the gravel, and I was shocked that our dogs didn't pick up on this and start barking. The footsteps came from the paddock next door and walked down our driveway and up the veranda steps out the back. I could hear whoever this was walking around outside our home, shifting things as it bumped into them. I then heard second footsteps in the gravel outside my room. Soon after the first being appeared outside my window, and the second then jumped up over the veranda railing and stood next to the first. Their forms blocked the light shining in, and I could make them out to be somewhat tall and incredibly thin. The two creatures hung around for about 30 minutes, pacing back and forth around the house before they finally left, and I heard the footsteps get softer, jump the fence, and then the mysterious light lifted off into the sky. I had just gone to bed, so I know it wasn't my subconscious playing tricks on me. I was still well enough awake. The next night, another strange occurrence happened. I remember it being eerily silent, so quiet in fact that it made me increasingly paranoid as the night went on. I don't recall what time this happened, but I remember the only sound I could hear that night was a strange sort of deep rumbling passing overhead. It would circle over the house and to the far back paddock and continued to do so for an hour before the rumbling moved overhead for the last time out the back and vanished. A few years later, I finished school. Before moving into my own place, I had to get up very early in the mornings to drive to work. I woke up at 3 a.m. as usual, packed my bag, ate breakfast, etc. I was driving to work when I noticed a bright light in the sky. The light fell behind some of the hills to my right, and when I looked ahead, I swear I saw a figure of a man running across the road in the darkness. I saw it roughly 5 meters away from me. As it moved off the road, it appeared to just vanish as if it went translucent. If that wasn't enough, I was at the bar with my sister working as a bartender, and one of the locals walked in. We were casually just talking, and I told him what I saw, and he mentioned to me that a few nights after my encounter, he started getting strange occurrences, waking up after midnight to his dogs barking. He finally went to investigate the strange bright lights in the next door paddock, but his dogs wouldn't follow. He walked to the paddock where he claimed to have seen these lights hovering above the ground. When he got there, the lights shot off into the sky, and all was left was a ring of mutilated livestock forming a perfect circle. He was confused and ran back home and never spoke of what he saw until I mentioned it to him. After these events, I never doubted stories told to me by friends and people I met who claimed to have seen UFOs and aliens, and I have never since questioned the existence of extraterrestrials. Anyway, that's my story. I know what I saw those nights. I don't normally talk about it because people aren't very open to the concept of aliens and UFOs. Whether you believe me or not is up to you, honestly. I just felt like sharing my experiences with you. The Leatherman was local folklore. Virtually everyone I knew in Connecticut had heard and wondered about the mysterious hobo who, clad in handmade leather clothes, had wandered our state in the 19th century, sleeping in caves and making brief, Bigfoot-like appearances in little rural towns. The few folks who encountered him as he trekked the same 365-mile circuit year after year say he communicated in fractured English and hand gestures, never quite holding a conversation, and thus remaining an enigma. We had all seen the eerie daguerreotype photograph of the Leatherman, a brutish vagrant with a frayed beard and wild, unstable eyes, his skin caked in grime, his homemade leather outfit stitched together like some awful sartorial Frankenstein. He was of great interest to me and my buddies. Todd, Jeremy, and I had always been obsessed with folklore and urban legends, even going as far as starting our own online vlog devoted to exploring, debunking, and investigating sightings and happenings in our native region. You may have even seen some of our videos, though I doubt it, just like all those shitty Discovery Channel shows about hunting Bigfoot. We had never actually found anything. Despite our vlog, I was hesitant when Todd first told me he wanted to go explore the old Leatherman Cave. I had a fear of tight spaces, and after hearing about a spelunker who got trapped in a cave and died in claustrophobic darkness, I had vowed never to make the same mistake. Todd said the cost of admission my discomfort was well worth the footage we'd grab for YouTube, and I had to admit there was a certain allure in visiting the caves where the famous folk legend had dwelled. Jeremy egged me on, and, not wanting to be the Debbie Downer, I agreed to join them on a Friday after school for a little adventure. So we set off in Todd's shitty hatchback, heading up the interstate towards Watertown, Connecticut, off in search of the Leatherman. It was getting dark by the time we arrived at the Matatuck State Forest. Shadows were growing as we parked in the empty car park, which was nothing more than a dirt lot on the edge of the woods, and started up a thin hiking trail which led through the trees. This didn't seem right, I thought. The trail was narrow and overgrown. It felt disused, and I had a feeling we were trespassing. Sure enough, I looked up the Leatherman Cave on Google Maps and saw we were headed away from it. As a matter of fact, we had parked in the completely wrong area of the forest. "Dude, we're going the wrong way," I said, slightly annoyed. "We're going the right way, Romeo," Jeremy said, blowing smoke from his cigarette. "No, idiot," I said, showing him my phone. "See," Todd sighed, "I didn't want you to freak out." "What? Freak out about what?" Todd and Jeremy swapped looks. "That one isn't the real Leatherman Cave. I mean, yeah, he stayed there, but it's not even really a cave, just sort of an outdoor rock formation. The real cave, the one he slept in during the winter, that one's this way." "What are you talking about when you Google it?" "The real one isn't on Google," Jeremy said with a smirk. "Todd got it from Cryptid 82. That pissed me off even more. Cryptid 82 was this crackpot conspiracy theorist who lived in our comments section named a conspiracy theory, and he believed it beyond a doubt. Are you kidding me? That guy is nuts." "Cool off," Todd said, trudging ahead. "We're almost there. We could get lost or trapped in a cave-in or..." "We'll be fine," Jeremy said. "There's not going to be a cave-in. You can wait in the car if you're going to be annoying about it." The thought of sitting alone in that empty dirt lot while the sun sank west and the moon crept in made me shudder. "Whatever," I said under my breath, trudging along with them. As fate would have it, my friends didn't die in a cave-in. They did, however, die in a cave. I thought the cave entrance looked like a mouth, like a grate. Rocky mouth had opened up in the forest floor to feed off those who came looking. By the time we had reached it 40 minutes later, it had gotten dark. For the last 10 minutes, we'd been navigating by flashlight. We all swapped awkward glances, none of us wanting to be the first one in. "Ladies first," Todd finally said, gesturing at me with a camcorder he held as if I'd obediently crawl in like a beaten dog. "No chance, cameraman," I said. "You first." "I'll go first," Jeremy said with a sigh. And in he went, his flashlight illuminating the wide mouth of the cave. It looked worse than it was, sloping down like a set of craggy stairs, easily navigable with careful footing, and Jeremy made a good go of it. The end of the decline narrowed down into a tight entryway that led into the belly of the earth, just big enough for us to squeeze through. Jeremy reached it and paused, looking back at us. "Come on, pussies," he called. "Shall we?" Todd asked, his face etched in the bluish light of the camcorder's monitor. I hesitated before nodding, and down we went, carefully and slowly, not wanting to wrench an ankle and spoil the night's fun. A few moments later, we reached the narrow entryway and squeezed through, beginning our winding journey down towards the Leatherman's cave. I was the first one to hear the noise, a soft weeping carrying up through the rock. We had found a massive cavern filled by huge pillars of stone and stalactite, which spiraled up and down at least 50 feet either way. It was incredible, and the space lit up in the glow of our flashlights, the mineral in the rock acquiring a strange luminescence. Jeremy and Todd were doing their usual overdramatic YouTube commentary, while I searched for another tunnel that would lead us further. I had found one tucked away into the dark recesses of the cave. It was smaller than the first, but big enough for us to pass through if we crouched. That's when I heard it. The weeping. It trickled out like a run of water, faint and hollow. "What the F?" I muttered. I gestured the others over. "Looks like David found something," Jeremy narrated to the camera as they joined me. Todd shoved the camera in my face. "So, David, what'd you—" I hissed. "Quiet. Listen." They listened. They heard the distant weeping, but now I thought it must be moaning, and I saw their faces change in a synchronicity which would have been comical under other circumstances. Their brows furrowed, their postures coiled with tension. "What the F?" Jeremy whispered. "You getting this?" Todd nodded, cupping his hand around the camera's shotgun mic so it would capture the noise in decent clarity. "Might just be the wind," Todd said, not sounding convinced. "Let's find out," I said, indicating the tunnel from which the weeping siphoned out. Todd and Jeremy looked at each other uneasily, which gave me some satisfaction. They had abruptly sprung this on me, and now I intended to see it through. "I don't know, dude," Jeremy started. "I think we should." I ignored him and started through the low-bearing tunnel. Todd, camera poised, hesitated, but only for an instant before following me through. Jeremy came last. I could hear his breath, thick and measured, laced with fear. I awoke with the world inverted. I was dangling upside down in a cave which stunk of rot and wore the meager glow of an old lantern. I could see the lantern, guttering from a nail on the wall, and gagged at the putrid stench it gave off. It was only later that I realized that lantern was burning human fat. Something warm and sticky dampened my hair. Blood. The pounding in my head had just begun like two big tribal drums, and as I felt the warm syrup run from my head, a dull pain took form in the back of my skull. I wasn't sure how long I had been out, and couldn't for the life of me remember what had led to this moment. Thinking about it only made my head worse, so I stopped trying. I heard a groan. Then a scream, a shriek of pure agony. That was Jeremy, howling like molten fire was being drizzled over his eyes. I swung my weight, trying to shift around for a look. It was hard. My hands were bound with coarse rope, and my feet were to the sky secured to a length of rope, which ran over and under the lumpy rock formations like a pulley system. I struggled and grunted, my head pounding from the exertion. Finally, when I thought my brain might pop, I managed to turn around. I saw them. Time froze. I remembered. We had been inching through the tunnel for a while now. This one was longer than the first. We were crouched, shuffling along in single file, grunting each time a lip of rock barked a shin or an elbow, and we had been this way for at least 6 hours. In reality, it had only been 30 minutes, and by then I was desperate to get the F out of here. My legs were screaming with aches and pains, and I was thinking about the bath I'd take later, so I didn't register what Todd said at first. "What?" I asked, incredulous. "There's light," he insisted. And he was right. A distant portal of orange light, flickering like firelight, like lamplight, glowed from ahead. I was too tired to contemplate what that might mean. I honestly thought it might be a tunnel exit which would spit us out above ground by someone's campsite. In a way, I wasn't wrong, but it didn't surface above ground. The smell slapped us in the face as we drew closer. It was the tepid reek of rotting things, wafting in like poison gas. "Jesus Christ," Jeremy gagged. "What is that?" "Something must have crawled in here and died," said Todd. pinching his nose with his free hand. The smell was nearly suffocating by the time we crawled out of the tunnel and stepped into the dimly lit cave. It was about the size of a garage, partitioned by huge spires of stalagmite which rose from the floor and split the room in half. There were dead things strewn about. Animals, mostly. Some humans. A hiker, his bloody corpse half hidden beneath a rotting pile of bodies. Humans and animals, and some which could have been either. Bloody leather hides were tacked to the wall, and the floor was stained and sticky with black blood. Flies swarmed in dizzying clouds. I realized only after that those leather hides were human. The guttering light came from a lantern, hanging on the far wall that side of the cave was screened from view by the massive wall of rock, which rose halfway to the ceiling. It was hot, humid, dizzying. Jeremy gagged and heaved, and a great blast of vomit shot from his mouth. Todd grunted, turned, and puked too, splattering the cave floor and the school cafeteria's finest Salisbury steak. I stood there in stunned silence. Suddenly, the room was doused in darkness. Someone had killed the lantern. "Guys, what's going on?" Todd asked, fear in eyes which were dimly illuminated by the camcorder's side screen. I started. "We need to get out of here, now," Jeremy whispered, the last words I'd ever hear him say. There was the meaty shuffling of heavy feet. Then there was a cry, a scream, a sickening crunch, and the thud of a body hitting the floor. One flashlight smacked the ground and shattered. The remaining two beams of light, mine and Todd's, I think, swung around frantically. A shape moved through the darkness, bulky in his leather attire. Todd let out a sudden cry, which was cut short by the crackle of bone. I heard his body hit the ground with a limp thud. I oriented myself and scrambled for the tunnel out of this nightmare. I found it with my light and had just managed to pull myself in when I felt something move behind me. The air shifted. It got warmer. Hands clamped down on my ankles and yanked me back into the cave. I cried out. The other thing hissed. He reeked of dead fish. He grunted and hissed again. I screamed and kicked my legs, fighting away. I found my feet and lunged for the tunnel. I heard a whoosh of air as something hard and blunt was swung. It impacted my skull with a crackle. A flower of light burst across my vision. I crumpled into darkness. When I woke up, I was hanging upside down. I was upside down and I had managed to turn just enough to see my friend Todd, slumped over in the corner. At first, I wasn't sure what I was looking at. His whole body was gristly and red. I realized that was his muscle, sinewy and drenched in blood, for he had been flayed head to toe and looked like something from a scientific textbook. Flies drank from the sticky pool of ichor that was spreading beneath him. Vomit rumbled in my stomach. I fought it back, my head swiveling as I searched for the screaming Jeremy. I saw the Leatherman first. His hunched, drooping frame draped in those leather clothes, which I now knew were made from the skin of human beings. He was big and paunchy, with a weird frame unlike any man I had ever seen. It was huge and disjointed, oddly crooked, like a giant with severe curvature of the spine.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
He held a sharpened jawbone like a knife and was in the process of flaying my friend, sawing the skin from his flesh as blood poured out in a great red river. Jeremy was wrapped around a stalagmite, bound and blubbering for mercy. His legs were a bloody mess. Flaps of skin, red and bleeding, hung from his exposed muscle, tendon, and bone like peeling wallpaper. Jeremy, sobbing, screaming, suddenly began to shake. He had gone into some kind of fit, bucking and rattling against his binds, brutally convulsing under the strains of his situation. The Leatherman grunted and promptly sawed the bone knife through Jeremy's neck. Blood came pouring out, more blood than I had ever seen. I squeezed my eyes shut, unable to watch any more. That was my fate soon, and I didn't have much time. I quickly patted my jean pockets, hoping it hadn't fallen out. I was looking for my Leatherman brand multi-tool knife. The irony of the name wasn't lost on me, and I was flooded with relief when I felt the hard rectangle in my left pant pocket. I fished out the knife and began to saw through my sturdy binds. After an eternity, the rope split and my hands fell free. I was reaching up for my ankles when I heard a grunt. I went limp, wrists together, pretending I was still bound and immobile. Through slitted eyes, I watched the Leatherman lumber towards me, his bloody jawbone knife in hand. His eyes were a startling baby blue, as bright and clear as a sun-blasted sky. His coarse black hair shot out at weird angles, and his beard, which was patchy and thin, held together a face like a potato. He reached me and paused, sensing something. I could feel his hot, congested breath on my cheeks, and it took every ounce of strength I had not to lose my bladder. I wasn't sure I could do this, and at the same time, I had to. My hand shot out and sheathed the blade of my pocket knife in the Leatherman's neck. I felt it go in with nauseating ease, sinking into his hot flesh like a knife through butter. I wrenched it free without hesitation. It was such a clean incision that for a moment the cut didn't present itself. His neck appeared intact, until he reached up with a kind of stunned stupidity, and then a great rush of blood roared from his severed jugular. He screeched and batted my head with the palm of his hand. It was like getting hit in the face by a baseball. I cried out and flinched, feeling a solar flare of agony shoot through my brain. My vision blurred, and when it realigned, I saw him raising the jawbone at my stomach. I grunted and punched the tip of my knife at his bright blue left eye. It was not an accurate stab. Actually, it was way off, and had he not stepped into the trajectory, I would have missed completely. But he did step into it, and the 3-inch blade disappeared into his eye, pinning his eyeball to the back of its socket. I felt the eyeball pop, and a rush of hot pus and ocular fluid dribbled out around my hand. I cried out in disgust and tried to yank the knife free, but the flimsy blade snapped off at the handle. I didn't care. By then, the Leatherman was swaying dizzily, and a moment later, his body was buckling backwards. He thudded to the ground and convulsed for a moment before stilling, his leather-bound body drenched in blood, both his and my friend's. For the next 2 hours, I snipped away at the rope binding my feet with the tiny scissors on my Leatherman multi-tool. They were thin and weak, and for a frightening, while I was certain I would never escape this cave alive. Then the rope split with a sound like paper tearing, and I was on the floor, in a puddle of blood, staring at the bodies of my friends, those that came before us, and the thing that had taken them all. It took another 2 interminable hours to crawl back through the dark veins of the earth, and find a section of woods that had any cell reception. At that point, I called the police and screamed. It's years later, and that night still haunts me. As I write this at 3 a.m., a damp nightmare sweat drying on my skin, I think about my friends and the thing that dwelled in those caves. The police said he was a vagrant. He had no family, no ID, and his DNA didn't match any known records. People online have speculated that he was something else. I myself have, too. I write this more as a word of warning than anything else. I guess I just want to say, no matter what, don't go looking, unless you're certain you're prepared to face what you might find. In 1905, a young girl was sent by her parents to gather fruit in the area of Tenerife, Canary Islands, just before supper. However, the girl never returned and a massive search was conducted all over Tenerife for her. She was never found. However, 3 decades later in 1958, the young girl reportedly returned, looking exactly the same as the time that she disappeared. According to her, only 15-20 minutes had gone by. According to the girl, as she was collecting pears from a pear grove, she noticed a very tall man dressed in white standing near her. Strangely, she felt no fear, but instead felt a strange attraction toward the man. The tall entity then invited the girl to follow him, and she immediately accepted. The girl accompanied the stranger into a nearby ravine named Barranco de Badajoz, where there was a descending set of steps, and the girl followed the white-clad stranger down. At the bottom of the steps, there was a garden in which there were other similar white-dressed entities. The girl remembers speaking for a few minutes with a strange group and later was guided back up the steps by the initial entity, which then bade farewell to the girl. Incredibly to the girl, it had only been missing 15-20 minutes, but in actuality, 30 years had gone by. Apparently, the investigators were frustrated by the lack of cooperation by the local authorities about the event. Only one local elderly woman came forward and suggested that the girl of the pears might still be alive. I was working as a supervisor in Tampa, Florida, at an international trucking company in the late 1990s. A gentleman was brought into my office and was introduced as the new VP of the Southeast Division. I can only remember his first name as Joe. He was very tall, I'm guessing 6 feet or taller. My head came up to his shoulder, I was 5'10", and he was very slender. There was no one else in the office at the time he walked in and looked around. I noticed that he seemed very pale in color, had white hair, wore a white shirt with a brown necktie, and wore a dark gray suit. I walked over to introduce myself. As I told him my name, I held out my hand to shake hands with him. At first touch, his hand was ice cold and his fingers were long, and as he grasped my hand, a vibrating electrical shock went from my right hand up to my elbow. We released hands and I glanced up at him. His eyes were dark and he had a slight smirk on his face. It immediately went through my mind that he knew that I knew he was not human. I just slowly walked away and he walked back out onto the dock where the freight was. He never spoke a word the whole time. I was shaken by this occurrence, but I never told anyone. This happening bothered me for many months. I never told anyone for almost 20 years. Except that one day my husband and I were watching a television program and the host asked, "Have you ever met an alien being?" Without thinking, I said, "Yup," I shook hands with one. As soon as I said it, I got up and went into the kitchen. I couldn't believe I said that out loud. My husband said, "What? Why didn't you say anything?" And I replied, "Because I knew no one would ever believe me." I never told my husband any more about it and never spoke of it again. Until now, I have always believed in outer space beings since I was a child. The only reason I'm telling you is that my health is starting to decline and I feel that I must tell someone. Over the years I've thought of it and how unnerving it was. I'm sorry that I cannot remember the exact date or time. I think it happened in the very late 1990s or very early 2000s. I can't remember the time of year because they have no weather seasons to speak of in Florida. I just remembered that within the next 3-4 months, It was mentioned that Joe abruptly left the company with no specific reason. That's really all that I can recall from the encounter. But I suspect that something else had occurred, and I'm just not remembering what it was. I decided to come forward and tell you about my early and most encounter. I've never told a soul about this, fearing that I would be rebuffed. My earliest experience was on a November 2014 night at approximately 9 p.m., and I was in my bed watching television. I was 17 years old and living at home with my parents and younger brother in Morgantown, West Virginia. Directly above my bed were three windows with glass panels. The television was to the left of my bed. Suddenly, my attention was drawn to the floor approximately 4 feet from the desk my television was on. What I saw was a beam of light moving very quickly in small circles in one concentrated spot on my floor. The circle motions it made were not perfect, the best I can describe them as were wobbly circles. The beam was solid, pure solid light, and approximately an inch or less wide. It was very thin. The color was pure white with somewhat of a bluish tinge around the outside of the beam. The beam itself was bright, but did not seem to emit any light beyond its edges. My room was not filled with light, only this beam. I watched the light for about 30 seconds, but I began to feel dread and fled my room in a state of total panic. I was not able to tell exactly which of the three windows the beam was aimed through, but assumed that had it beamed straight into my room onto the wall parallel, it would be 90 degrees. I would estimate that it hit my floor at a diagonal angle of about 60 degrees. When I got downstairs, I looked outside to see any evidence of a craft. I have never, to my knowledge, witnessed a UFO, and there was none. There were no aircraft of any kind besides high-flying commercial planes. I did not tell anyone in my house about what I had seen. I wasn't sure if my mind was playing tricks on me or what had actually happened, but I saw something. When I checked the area later, there was no evidence whatsoever of the beam having ever touched my floor. 2 days later, I witnessed one more anomalous event which I believe may be connected, and this time my younger brother was also a witness. A pitch-black figure, which appeared to be two-dimensional, in a very humanoid form quickly passed across a window and wall which were directly in front of where we were sitting, about 12 feet away. The figure had no discernible features on its face, no clothing, and no hair. Just a round head and human-like torso were all we were able to make out. It was impossible to make a height estimate. It was for certain inside our house, not a reflection from outside. The sighting of this being lasted about 10 seconds. Then it faded away. There was no logical explanation for what we saw. It was most certainly paranormal. I have seen a figure like that once before, and I am certain it was of the same nature. Recently, August 15, 2023, I witnessed a dark humanoid-like being that I saw flying in the early evening sky around 7:15 p.m. It had large wings that were shaped like a bat. I'd say that it was approximately 150-200 feet above me, gliding westbound very slowly. I reached for my phone, but it suddenly gathered speed and quickly zoomed off. I live near Chicago, Illinois, and Evanston, but the sighting took place while I was at the public storage located at 2050 Green Bay Road. I was with my husband and daughter at the time. Last night, August 20, 2023, my husband and I observed a huge, bright cylindrical object in the sky. It streaked above our property while we were in the backyard. The time was approximately 9:40 p.m. It was traveling too fast for a photograph. I found your contact information after searching Google. I then saw and read about the Chicago Mothman sightings. I had never heard anything about these sightings previously. I wonder if this winged humanoid was related to my previous experiences in Morgantown. Wasn't hiking, but was camping near the Appalachian Trail when I was a teenager, admittedly to go drink on the 4th of July. Lived near the Appalachian Trail my whole life, so knew that it was a ripe spot for meth heads and serious poverty. We had chosen a nice big clearing that was next to a parking lot, but we knew the area well enough to know that it wasn't a very visited spot. Got a drink somewhere. Woke up in the middle of the night to a low hum of some type of vehicle. Dismissed it as being in the parking lot. Fell back asleep. Next thing you know, the ground was shaking. Felt the ground almost compressing. So the car couldn't be more than 2-3 feet from our tent, driving at a slow pace with the headlights off. Naturally thought it was a park ranger, but was too scared to be caught drinking to say anything. So I froze up and just pretended to be asleep. Eventually the car drives by full gas and could hear it go off in the distance, but all of a sudden everything was silent and I see a lot of flashlights walking past our tents. I dismissed it as how lights can look like a lot of lights when shown through a tent. So thinking it was my friends who gotten out to check what was up with that car, I told them to shut the F lights off. They did. All went off at the same time. I then turned over to see the outline of all my friends in their sleeping bags, but since we had one more tent, I wasn't worried. The guys in the other tent the next day then asked us if we had gotten out and drove through the campground last night. We said no. I then asked them if they went to check it out. They in turn said no. They thought it was us just returning to our tents. I then had the most uneasy feeling in the world, like I was about to throw up. Probably from the copious amounts of barley, but also just frozen in fear. I live in Belvedere, 14 miles away from Flintville, Tennessee. I was in fourth grade in 1976 when the Flintville Monster story came out in the Elk Valley Times. It was about the woman who almost got her child snatched by this creature. As a kid, this was really scary because to me that thing could easily walk 14 miles east to our woods. I was scared to go into the woods. In August 1994, my sister and cousin took a drive up our dead-end road when they saw a white creature on two legs walk quickly across the road and started running into the nursery across the road. Not long after, my brother was awakened by the dogs barking and saw a huge hairy white shape walk past our glass back door. I mention this because think the white creature in this Kelso, Flintville sighting and my sister's was the same creature. We are only a few miles from the Elk River, and I've heard these Bigfoot creatures follow waterways. Partner and I set off for a weekend camping trip in the Rocky Mountains after work on a Friday. Late start, so we didn't get to the road we were looking to camp off of until late. It was getting dark. We found a cleared area, parked my Jeep and hastily set up our two-person tent, threw in our sleeping arrangements and dog, and hopped in the tent for the night. We were playing a board game sitting cross-legged around 9 p.m. when something swiped at the back of my head through the tent wall. We panicked a bit, used remote start on the car to scare whatever it was off. I tried to convince myself and my partner that it was a falling stick. There was no wind and we were in a clearing. The next morning we came to discover that we were about 10 feet from a half-eaten deer and a mountain lion's pantry. I got pet on the head by a mountain lion. Mind you, I'm well above average height, and this kitty was taller than me sitting down. Not my story, but a coworker. We are in the natural resources field, doing a lot of biological surveys, checking properties, building trails, etc. A coworker of mine was in a remote area of a small park. She was doing some GPS monitoring of invasive species and came upon a naked older fella in a wheelchair doing yoga in the woods. She didn't see him until she was right next to him. He struck up an awkward conversation with no shame. She has no idea how he managed to get the wheelchair out there, There were no nearby trails, and the closest road was pretty far away, maybe a half mile through steep hills and thick brush. She still questions whether she hallucinated the whole thing. I've also found a mattress covered in bones and blood, which luckily turned out to be deer bones, but still unsettling. I was out night walking with my friends in the local national forest. We all have night vision, so we go blacked out, and all of the sudden we hear some crunching nearby. We stop and listen, whispering to each other, and all of the sudden the crunching stops and we hear some whispers as well. We have no idea what's going on and start shining the trees with our IR lights invisible to the naked eye, and bam, we get lit up too. Thinking it's white light, I take my nods off, but I can't see anything, and then it clicked. It was another group of dudes doing the exact same thing. They sort of realized at the same time, and we all started laughing with relief and met up to compare gear. Ended up being a cool group of guys, and we all went on with our night, remembering that we're not the only ones out there with that kind of tech. I can only imagine how many people we freaked out who couldn't see us. But this was the first time we ran into someone who could. The forest loomed before us, its dark trees stretching upwards like skeletal fingers clawing at the sky. We stood at the edge of the tree line, a group of five hunters, our faces marked by a mix of excitement and trepidation. The story of the haunted forest had drawn us here, a place where the bravest sought to prove their mettle against the unknown. Armed with only traditional weapons and our wits, we were ready to face whatever challenges lay ahead. As the sun sank below the horizon, casting long shadows over the forest floor, we ventured deeper into the woods. The air was thick with an eerie silence, broken only by the rustling of leaves and the occasional snap of a twig beneath our boots. The tension was palpable, the anticipation of the hunt mixing with the creeping unease that the legends had instilled in us. Night descended swiftly, and a shiver ran down my spine as I realized that the forest was transforming. The trees seemed to close in around us, their branches becoming gnarled and twisted like the fingers of some ancient, malevolent force. I exchanged glances with my companions, their expressions mirroring my own growing sense of unease. We set up camp in a small clearing, our campfire casting flickering shadows that danced along the perimeter. As we huddled around, our voices were hushed, and the laughter that had accompanied our journey here now felt like a distant memory. We spoke of the legends, the stories of hunters who had ventured into this forest before and never returned. As the fire crackled, a sudden snap echoed through the woods. We fell silent, our gazes darting towards the source of the sound. The forest seemed to hold its breath, and then a low growl resonated from the shadows. My heart pounded in my chest as I stared into the darkness, my grip tightening around the handle of my bow. And then it emerged. A figure stepped into the flickering light of the fire, its monstrous form casting elongated shadows that danced upon the trees. Its overlong arms hung nearly to its feet, the deadly claws jutting out like nightmarish weapons. The silver-like hair that covered its body shimmered in the firelight, and its eyes, piercing blue and ancient, locked onto us. The creature's head resembled that of a grizzly bear, its snout deeply scarred from battles with beings even larger than itself. Its presence was overpowering, a chilling reminder that we were trespassers in its domain. Fear held us in its grip, and our weapons felt suddenly inadequate against this malevolent force. As if sensing our vulnerability, the creature moved closer, its movements graceful yet predatory. Panic surged through our group, and I could feel the tremors in my own limbs. With an echoing roar that seemed to reverberate through the very air, it lunged at us, and chaos erupted. Arrows were released, knives flashed, and the forest echoed with our shouts and the creature's roars. In the midst of the frenzy, I saw one of my companions fall, a lethal blow from the creature's claws ending his struggle. realization crashed over us like a tidal wave. We were being hunted. The creature was no legend, no mere ghost story. It was real, and it was intent on our destruction. As we fought, it became clear that our traditional weapons were no match for its sheer power and ferocity. With every passing moment, the group dwindled, each member falling victim to the relentless predator that stalked us. We were exhausted, wounded, and filled with a desperate determination to survive. But the creature was relentless, its silver-haired form a nightmarish blur in the darkness. Dawn broke, casting a dim light over the clearing where the final battle had taken place. The creature was nowhere to be seen, its presence evaporating like a nightmare upon waking. We were battered, bruised, and broken survivors of a horror that defied explanation. When we finally emerged from the forest, our faces told a story of terror and loss. We stumbled upon a group of other hunters, their eyes widening as they took in our disheveled appearance. We recounted our experience, our voices heavy with the weight of our experiences. The police were called, their accusatory eyes narrowing as they listened to our account. They dismissed our claims of a monstrous creature, accusing us of being involved in the death of our fallen companions. We were met with skepticism and disbelief, our voices drowned out by their assumptions. Luckily, police did not prosecute us due to lack of evidence and classified the whole case as a bear attack. But we know it wasn't.